My name is Mark Caleb Smith, your intrepid correspondent from Bereans at the Gate. Welcome to our podcast. That was an interesting little audio clip. You know, someone who works on podcasts occasionally, I'm always in the market for interesting audio pieces. Also, as someone who got a new computer recently, I was despaired to find out that GarageBand no longer supports podcasting, at least not in the same way. So I had to go on a bit of an internet hunt to find the right piece of music and came across a website that had free music for such things like podcasts. And that's a little piece of music by a group called Leche Swing, and it's called Hungaria. I thought it was interesting, worth listening to some extent. The drink of choice today is coffee. It's supposed to be swelteringly hot today in Ohio. Maybe I did not get the memorandum, but coffee is still my drink of choice for the moment. The news of the day, of course, is Hillary Clinton and all of the interesting things happening to her. If you haven't been paying attention, of course, yesterday James Comey, the director of the FBI, came out publicly and said that Mrs. Clinton would not be prosecuted, or at least he would not recommend an indictment for her actions relating to her email scandal. As you might expect, this has created quite a firestorm across the right in particular, but really I think to some degree across the entire country. I think if you look at the facts of the case, it's pretty clear that Mrs. Clinton at least came very, very close to violating the law, if not outrightly violating it. And I think a lot of people are frustrated because they see this as an attack on what we political scientists and others might routinely refer to as the rule of law. This idea that in a society such as ours, we are a nation of laws, not a nation of human beings. You might think that a bit odd, of course, because human beings, after all, do make the law. But the point is pretty clear that in a nation of law, everyone is equal under the law. And so in such a regime, there is an equal application of the law, regardless of your circumstance, regardless of your position in life. To put it a little bit differently, if you think of that statue of Lady Justice, she has a blindfold. That blindfold is there to signify that she does not take into account race or color or creed or gender or age or anything else when she considers how to apply the law. And so justice is blind so that we can all be treated equally under the law. Many people believe that this idea took a hit yesterday, at least in the American context, that Mrs. Clinton was obviously guilty, that the statute in place had language that was relevant to her situation, and the director of the FBI, James Comey, simply decided of his own accord not to recommend an indictment for Mrs. Clinton. Now, I'm not an expert on the Espionage Act. I did read the relevant statute. Based on the facts that I know, it certainly seems very possible that she could be prosecuted under violating the statute. The statute has two different components to it that apply to her situation. One deals with the intent to do something. The other involves gross negligence, regardless of intent. And her case comes closest to this idea of gross negligence. Director Comey used the word reckless, or what did he say? It was excessive carelessness or something along those lines. And I guess the question really is to what degree is that synonymous with gross negligence? You know, given that we're looking at hundreds of emails, given that we're looking at a chain of emails that contain the most classified material, top secret material, and given that she traveled in foreign countries and accessed that email server on devices that could have been monitored and could have been hacked, you know, Director Comey even said, it's quite probable that Mrs. Clinton made American national security interests vulnerable by her actions. I think to a large extent, I would say that is some kind of gross negligence. But, you know, maybe I'm in the minority here. But I'm not sure this necessarily is the case. And let me explain. I'm not saying that there's no evidence to indict Mrs. Clinton. I'm not saying that necessarily Director Comey made the right choice. But one thing to keep in mind, you know, it's easy for us as kind of armchair quarterbacks to think what we would do in Mr. Comey's position. But the reality is he's looking at a very complicated picture as he considers what to do in a case like Mrs. Clinton's. I'm guessing he knew full well that even if he recommended an indictment, at some point President Obama would short-circuit that process. And given that probability, Mr. Comey is put in the position where he can recommend an indictment and the president says no, which of course undermines the FBI, limits its impact, or he could not recommend an indictment, even though the evidence seems to point that way, which further calls into question the integrity of the FBI, potentially. You know, I've never been a lawyer, never been a federal prosecutor, so I can't speak from experience, but as a political scientist, we frequently look at how people interact with and maintain institutions. And if we think of the FBI as an institution, it might help us at least understand to a degree Mr. Comey's decision. I think the worst case scenario for Mr. Comey would be to recommend an indictment, have a trial go forward, and for Mrs. Clinton to be exonerated in the process. That would make his investigation look flawed. It would certainly create a great deal of political turmoil in the country as a presumptive nominee for the presidency is indicted and tried. And it would shake the confidence that many people would have in the FBI as an institution. My thinking is that Mr. Comey looked at this situation, looked at the law at hand, and said, yeah, you know, I think a prosecutor could possibly make a case on this, but I'm not convinced that a jury would necessarily vote to convict. And if a jury isn't likely to convict in a case like this, what is the purpose of going forward with an indictment and a trial? Now, at one level, you'd say, you know, in the American system of criminal justice, that's what juries do. We put a case in front of a jury, they make the decision, we live with that decision, and that's the nature of the beast. But you have to understand, as someone who might recommend an indictment, this is not your everyday garden variety situation. You know, for instance, if a prosecutor here in Ohio decided he was going to walk into the governor's office and slap some handcuffs on John Kasich, arrest him, indict him, and bring him to trial, then you better be pretty confident in your case. You better be pretty confident that you're going to have a successful outcome. If you don't, you're going to be accused of playing politics. You're going to be accused of interfering in the political process. You're going to be accused of politicizing the justice system in order to target an elected official. I think it's very possible, had the FBI gone down that road, and even if the Obama administration had acquiesced and indicted Mrs. Clinton and prosecuted Mrs. Clinton, and then she was exonerated, I think the situation is actually worse than it might be right now. Now, this isn't to excuse Director Comey. This isn't to argue that in his position I'd have done the same thing. But we have to understand he sees himself to a degree as the guardian of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He sees himself to a degree as someone who needs to maintain the integrity of the Department of Justice. And while you might argue that prosecuting Mrs. Clinton, indicting her and prosecuting her, would uphold the integrity of the office, failing to convict her would damage the office dramatically. And so my sense is Mr. Comey may have thought, you know, this isn't a slam dunk case. If we put it in front of a jury and they don't convict her, and she spins this out as some sort of political witch hunt, then we all lose in the process. since we choose not to indict here, even if I have to kind of fuzz a little bit as it relates to the purpose of the statute and the wording of the statute, then it may be better off in the end. Now, keep in mind as well, I think Mr. Comey, even if he didn't bring an indictment, dealt a severe blow to Mrs. Clinton's credibility yesterday. And so even though he didn't bring an indictment, he still took the time to walk through the evidence the FBI had amassed, and he then compared that evidence, essentially, without doing so explicitly, with statements that Mrs. Clinton has made over the past year and a half. So did Hillary Clinton send and receive classified material from her private server? The answer is yes. Did Hillary Clinton handle top secret information through that process? The answer is yes. Did Hillary Clinton knowingly put herself in a position that made American national security more vulnerable because of her choices? The answer is yes. He even characterized her actions as extremely careless. And he attributed that to not only her, but those who surrounded her as they handled highly classified information. This is a severe blow to Mrs. Clinton's credibility. And it would have to cause people who look at these things at least somewhat objectively to think about her trustworthiness and her suitability to be president of the United States. After all, it isn't all that common that we think of the commander-in-chief as someone that is extremely careless in how they handle very sensitive, highly classified material. And so, you know, even though Mr. Comey did not issue an indictment, or he did not issue a recommendation for an indictment, he laid out the facts, he countered her statements about this situation from the past year and a half, he contradicted those, clearly, and he undermined her credibility severely. In a sense, then, I think you could argue that Mr. Comey achieved quite a bit, even though he did not choose to recommend an indictment. And again, if he thinks an indictment isn't going to happen anyway, then this is his best way to maintain the integrity of the FBI, to not be accused of politicizing the situation overly, and to still achieve his goal of making sure that some sense of justice comes out of this. Now, of course, his critics are going to argue just the opposite. They're going to say, hey, look at this. Comey is political. Someone got to Comey. The Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton meeting precipitated this decision, and this is kind of the whole system is junk, and this is the way that it just simply goes. And I guess it's still possible all that is true, that Mr. Comey's not trustworthy, the FBI is simply a tool of partisanship, and that's just the nature of things. But I only say these things to urge you to at least consider the possibility of this other alternative. Mr. Comey found himself in something of a bind, knew that an indictment would not come forth, even if he recommended so, thought that that would ultimately undermine the criminal justice system and create a constitutional crisis potentially. And so he decided against the indictment or the recommendation of the indictment and made his public statement as he did yesterday. Life from his position is much more complicated than it is from ours. And I guess all I'm asking is that people should consider a different perspective when they think through his decision and his action. Now, I started off the podcast by talking about how this matter relates to this idea of the rule of law. You know, this notion that we should not only obey the law, but we should create a culture that values obedience to the law. And that when disobedience occurs, then punishment should happen regardless of who you are, regardless of your circumstances. This idea, I would argue, is central to a healthy political system. Any form of government that wants to perpetuate itself, wants to maintain its stability, has to have some respect for this notion of the rule of law. Even if the source of the law is a king, there has to be some sense that that law is respected, and there's ability to maintain and to prosecute those who deviate from it. In a system like ours, though, in some ways you could argue that this notion is even more critical. You know, we live in a representative republic where we, the people, are the ultimate source of authority, or at least in theory. And so when our legislators make laws that come from us, that issue from us, the people, And they do not then, and then the powers that be don't apply these laws appropriately, then it makes the people feel even more alienated and disconnected from the governing process. So I vote for someone, they write a law, a bureaucrat somewhere in Washington or a lawyer interprets that law and chooses not to enforce it in a way that makes sense. And so my elected officials have been cut out of the process. And as a voter, it further disconnects me from what my government is doing. And so the great tragedy of this week, regardless of what you think of Mr. Comey, regardless of whether you think he made the right decision, no matter what you think of Mrs. Clinton, the great tragedy is that our view of the rule of law has been shaken. You know, Abraham Lincoln, of course, not a founding father, but one of our most pivotal presidents of the United States, probably understood our political system better than anyone not a founding father. And his famous speech at the Lyceum talked about this very issue of the importance of the obedience to the law. You know, Lincoln used some interesting language to describe this notion of civil obedience. He says, "Let reverence for the laws be breathed by every American mother to the lisping babe that prattles on her lap. Let it be taught in schools and seminaries and in colleges. Let it be written in primers, spelling books, and in almanacs. Let it be preached from the pulpit, proclaimed in legislative halls, and enforced in courts of justice. And in short, let it become the political religion of the nation, and let the old and the young, the rich and the poor, the grave and the gay of all sexes and tongues and colors and conditions sacrifice unceasingly upon its altars." When Lincoln was giving this speech, he was thinking about the issue of mob violence as it related to slavery and other matters. And he was encouraging his listeners to view the law in this very theological way. As he says, we should see it as our political religion, our reverence for the law. What he's arguing there is that our attachment to politics and our views of political issues shouldn't cloud us from our responsibility to obey the law. Whether you're for slavery or against it, when he was talking, your duty is to obey the law, because ultimately disobeying the law has much more severe consequences than this particular political issue. In today's context, we would say, whether you're Republican or Democrat, conservative or liberal, agree with Mrs. Clinton or disagree with Mrs. Clinton, agree with Mr. Comey or disagree with Mr. Comey, we need to preach obedience to the law. Preaching such obedience, though, is harder to do in situations like this, where even if it's not true, the appearance is that the law doesn't apply to everyone. So why should I obey the law as Joe Citizen if Hillary Clinton doesn't have to obey the law? That's the situation in which we find ourselves. You know, America is undergoing a significant transition, it seems. We see disruptions all around us. We see major parties stumbling into nominating people like Donald Trump and Mrs. Clinton for the highest office in the land. We've seen President Obama occasionally push the envelope, to say the least, as it relates to his own legal powers under the Constitution. We've seen the Supreme Court continue to interpret the Constitution in such a way that it causes people to question the legitimacy of the court. And so we're having a moment, we're having a national moment right now as to what these things mean. You know, I remember not long ago reading Justice Scalia, the departed, now departed Justice Scalia. And he, along with a gentleman named Garner, wrote quite a lot on the idea of the law. And one of Justice Scalia's basic arguments, I've heard him speak about this as well, one of the basic problems we're looking at right now is we can't even agree on what law is. We can't even agree on what it means. We can't even agree on the basic interpretation. We can't agree on what's authoritative about the law or what's not authoritative about it. And so we are going through a crisis of a kind as it relates to how we view the law. And my fear is, for too many of us, the law is just a political instrument. It's just something that we can bend and shape to achieve a political outcome, regardless of the law itself. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is how banana republics happen. This is how we transition from a government of law and toward a government of pure, naked, partisan politics, where the law doesn't matter, justice doesn't matter. What matters is a political outcome. That's no way for a society to function, certainly no way for a society to thrive. And if there is to be a gradual decline in American society, maybe we will trace it back to our evolving attitudes toward the law. But this isn't rooted only in what happened yesterday. This is a long-term generational transition we've been viewing for quite some time. No matter what you think of it, I still agree with Lincoln. We should make sure obedience to the law is an important part of what we do as a country, an important part of our educational process, and we should continue to encourage students, children, and others to view the law in this way. But as adults, and as voters, and as citizens, we have to continue to push our own elected officials to behave in this way also, and to simply throw them out of office if they don't. If we fail to do that, then they won't have any incentive to treat the law differently themselves. I mean, think of someone like Mr. Obama as a test case. You know, I would argue that Mr. Obama has pushed the boundaries of the Constitution as it relates to executive power. I'd say that his actions on immigration really should be considered unconstitutional under the way that I understand the president's powers in Article 2. But at what point has Mr. Obama felt any sting from his actions? Yeah, he has lost some court cases here and there. Recently, we saw the Supreme Court divide on this issue. But he's been elected, he's been reelected, and his basic approach to government and life hasn't changed as a result. And so what incentive has he had to change his attitude toward the law and toward the Constitution? And so we must continue to invigorate the system that we have to enforce the law whenever we suspect that it's been violated. Now, I guess you could argue in a roundabout way, I've kind of made the case for why Mr. Comey should have indicted Mrs. Clinton. And I think in many ways, had I been in his shoes, I would have argued for the indictment. However, I can understand his perspective, and I would like to learn more about why he did what he did. Hopefully at some point he'll open up to someone or he'll write something that gives us a clearer indication of his thought process. Maybe not. Who knows? Anyway, as always, American politics is never boring. Sometimes I wish that it were, but it's never boring. This has been your humble correspondent, Mark Caleb Smith from Bereans at the Gate. I wish you well. Have a good rest of your week. Have a good summer. And expect to hear from me again in the near future. Thank you.